Okay, these are the curves I mentioned, and I wish JJ was here. He could help out with this. These are equal loudness contours. This was the work of Harvey Fletcher in the 20s?
20s and 30s, yeah.
20s and 30s, yeah. And these, each one of the curves represents the levels versus frequencies that the sample group perceived to be equal in loudness. So the first thing we can say, and maybe there's a lot of people don't know this, is that the frequency response of the human auditory system, your hearing, is not flat. Moreover, it varies with level. You'll see that the curves, although the upper part of the curves, the upper frequencies, the curves have a similar shape, they're not the same. And at the lower frequencies, they're very different. The very bottom curve, the one on the very bottom, okay, the very bottom curve right here is the threshold of hearing. Now, first of all, this is, oh, thank you, cool. Right here, the bottom curve is the threshold of hearing. But keep in mind, this is the average of a number of samples. It's to some extent subjective because that's the way sound is. The first thing you'll notice is that this line right here is 0 dB SPL. So in the mid frequencies right here, the upper mids, the threshold of hearing is about zero. You've always heard that the threshold of hearing is 0 dB SPL. Don't believe it. Only right there is it 0 dB SPL. What is the threshold of hearing at 20 hertz?
In your upper mids, it's also better than zero.
Yeah, actually, right here, it's a little bit better than that. But in the mid band, the mid range frequencies, it's about zero. Just varies a little bit, a few dB through that region. But look down here. What's that say?
78.
That's the threshold of hearing at 20 hertz. Ever thought about why the bass disappears when you turn your stereo down? It's not your stereo. Frequency response of your stereo doesn't vary with the volume setting, at least it shouldn't. It's your hearing right here. Even at 100 hertz, it's you're down around 20, around 30 dB. And 100 hertz isn't that low. Yes?
Does the DBA measurement system reflect the sensitivity where DBC is more flat?
We're going to come to that. Let's hang on to your question. I have a slide for that. And that's a really good question, and it does derive from this.
And Steve. Physiologically, of course, the reason we can't hear low-level, low-frequency things is so our heartbeat and blood flow don't drive us insane.
Yes, that's true. It has been pointed out by evolutionists that the reason our hearing evolved this way is that this is either for speech purposes, after we learn to talk, or maybe even before that, because that's where most of the energy is for approaching saber-toothed tigers and whatnot.
And child's crying.
Yeah.
Children.
Each one of these curves is roughly 10 dB apart. It turns out that way. What they were trying to achieve was, okay, we'll test at this frequency right here, and you tell us when, and then we'll raise it up, and you tell us when it's twice as loud. And they keep doing that. So each one of these curves is a doubling or a halving of perceived loudness, whatever that means. And it turns out that's about 10 dB in the mid-band. We talked, that was on one of the slides earlier. But looky down here at 20 or 30 or 40 hertz. They're not 10 dB apart down there. They're pinched together. Down here, it's only 3 or 4 dB per doubling of a perceived loudness. That's interesting. You may not have thought about that, but if you think about your listening experience, that's the way it works. If you increase the gain by 10 dB on your subwoofer, it's going to seem a lot more than twice as loud. It's also going to start clipping and may start smoking. But that's a separate subject. Notice that at the really high levels, the curve starts to straighten out, and that's why when you're playing your stereo really loud, the bass is better. It's not really louder, it just sounds louder. It sounds more predominant. And the origin of the so-called loudness control, they don't seem to be as popular as they used to be, but it's a bass boost, and sometimes as a function of the gain setting, it's a bass boost so that when you're listening at background music levels, the spectral balance that would be up here is restored. It's just not as loud.
The nice ones filter, leave the bass and filter the more sensitive frequencies.
Some do that way, yes.
Yeah.
There's a few of those were actually done fairly vigorously, and they worked pretty well, but most of them were just a fixed amount of boost and wasn't any different than clicking the bass control a couple, three notches. So there's several versions of these curves around. Other people have verified, repeated these experiments and gotten pretty much the same result, but there are some newer sets that are probably better to use. It's been reported to me by people who knew Harvey Fletcher. I've never met him, but I know people who did. And he said, if I'd have known they were going to chisel those in stone, I'd have spent a little more time on it. Apparently, he's a bit of a character. So I'm showing... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Steve. Do you have any idea how many people were his subjects?
No, and I've always wondered that. I had the impression it was only a few dozen, but I don't know that. Does anyone else know? But there's a couple of things that aren't always mentioned in this. And if JJ were here, he'd be vibrating by now trying to get this in. One is this was done with pure tone sine waves, using headphones. It isn't very valid for other types of signals or when you're in a room with acoustics. And it isn't just a matter of what the room noise and the reverberation and echoes do to it. It's apparently much more complicated, and I don't begin to understand it, and I'm not even sure even people like JJ fully understand that.
In what decade was this again?
Yeah, really.
The 20s and 30s.
This was in the 20s and 30s.
How good a headphones exactly. Do you have that can go down to these?
Oh, they had good ones.
That's why it's gone, is because it can't. There you go.
Bad headphones.
A good point, but they weren't using typical radio operator headphones.
I
saw some
response down there.
Yeah, they did have response down there. They hand-built them for the... I saw a picture of the headphones they were using, and they looked like two paint cans on these guys' heads.
It is a good question, though. How did they make sure they were flat?
How did they what?
How did they make sure they were flat? Like, there's all sorts of questions that it raises, like...
Yes, it's a good point, but it doesn't...
Leakage. And all these issues around headphones, you know?
Well, headphones are going to... be easier than speakers in a room for sure in that regard.
Some of those kinds of questions are covered in the people that have repeated this experiment over the decades.
Yeah.
There's some really good ones, too.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's probably why they've tried
They get into all that stuff.
Most of the newer curves are pretty close to these. These wiggles and stuff up here vary some with some of the newer curves, but they all pretty much got the same result, which is really remarkable given when this was done and by his own admission that it wasn't as rigorous as he wished it had been.
So if the dB is only a reference relative things, what does 0 dB SPL mean?
It's 20 micropascals.
I drew this.
20 micropascals.
I drew up on the board up here the way I, every time the word reference is brought up, I put this picture in my head. Where the reference is the circled P on the bottom.
It's the denominator of the fractional ratio.
So if you're talking about acoustics, which is what we're talking about here, we're talking about the dBSPL reference of 20 micropascals, and that's what 0 dB is here. So that's the reference, that's the context of your discussion if you're talking about acoustics. And if you're talking about volts or, you know, dB full scale, if you're in digital audio world, all these references, so the different purple things are the different references that we're talking about. And that's the context of your discussion when you talk about what you mean by dB. So that's the picture. I didn't understand this until I started thinking that I picture that every time we talk the word reference.
So what's the least number of micropascals that you can have? Zero?
Well, it shows you right here that less than 20 micropascals is possible here at this 3 kilohertz to 5 kilohertz range, right?
So
in the anechoic chamber that they're talking
about. Right? Yeah, that's what he's...
Yeah.
Exactly.
There's that's all about the molecules in the air vibrating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's just that we can't hear something. We can't hear. So there's not a naturally occurring 0 micropascals anywhere.
In space.
Vacuum?
Yes.
Vacuum. Space.
Or absolute zero.
Well, one could argue that even in a vacuum, there's a molecule every once in a while.
It would clearly
not be useful to the human auditory system, but it's even a vacuum isn't a full vacuum, at least the vacuum we think of as outer space. There's still a few things floating around out there, not very much, but some. But it doesn't work like on Star Wars where they're shooting it up in outer space and you hear all the explosions. That always kills me.
In a typical atmosphere like this, though, there is actually an absolute dBSPL limit that's about minus 27, which occurs just because of the Brownian motion of molecules. You can't really measure. You can't get below that.
And then temperature starts.
The noise floor, right?
And if you drop the temperature toward absolute zero, you can get less and less motion of those molecules.
I was just going to point out that the reference is on the bottom, so if you had zero, you get division by zero, and that's why at the bottom of your meters and your fader, there's a negative infinity.
Yeah, that's right. So how much is a dB, or what's the barely perceptible change? There's a big argument because in our audio world, most of us are used to people saying, well, it's 1 dB. That's what Fletcher determined. It's 1 dB. That's the barely perceptible change in sound level. But in many acousticians say no, the average person can't hear a 1 dB change. It takes a 3 dB change. My opinion personally is neither one is correct for the average person. For a highly trained ear, 1 dB is quite perceptible. And there are many people like that in this room. We all have, even those of us with hearing loss, still have highly developed hearing. That's the business we're in. And our brain mechanism that interprets those signals is more adept, literally, than the average person. Those curves are based on average people, not audio people. And the 3 dB, in my mind, that most noise control engineers say is the barely perceptible change is not in an instantaneous AB situation. It's listen to it now, listen to it an hour later. There, they're right. You can't hear or detect a 1 dB change if there's even 10 minutes in between the samples. Maybe not even after 1 minute. 1 dB is a 26% increase in power, a 12% increase in voltage, roughly. How much is 3 dB? Well, it's roughly twice the power, a 41% increase in voltage. That comes from the square root of 2, in case you haven't thought about it. Well, 10 dB, Fletcher said that's, at most frequencies, that's a doubling of perceived loudness is 10 times as much power, 3.616 times as much voltage, which is a square root of 10. So if you get one of these, if your neighbor's into a high-powered car stereo and he wants his system to be twice as loud and he has a 100-watt amplifier and asking you where to buy a 200-watt one, you can explain to him that he does not need a 200-watt one, he needs a 1,000-watt one, and probably going to need a new speaker to go with it or a few additional ones.
That also assumes he's using all of the 100 watts.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. How much is 20 dB? Four times as loud, some say. By the way, my personal observation is 20 dB is not four times or one-fourth as loud. I don't know why I'm out of sync, but apparently I am. 100 times as much power would be 10 times the voltage, and so on. How loud is 0 dB SPL? I don't know. I doubt if very many of us have ever experienced that. If you have a noise level that low, you begin to hear the blood flowing through your ears, and you may even hear your heartbeat. If you've ever been in a super quiet room, that room at Microsoft, for example, that will, you, after you sit there a few minutes and your thresholds come down, you'll start to hear things you've never heard before, and some of them are alarming until you realize what they are. Where'd my mouse go? So I'm going to play some pink noise. Now keep in mind that the Fletcher-Munson curves were not developed with pink noise. They were developed with tones, so this isn't entirely valid. But the problem with using tones over a loudspeaker in a room is standing waves and interference patterns means that everybody would hear a little bit different level. The pink noise being more random will minimize that problem. But I just want everybody to hear the differences in level of 3, 6, 10, and 20 dB. So the noise by itself will be a little bit loud. So this is the same signal, but reduced by 3 dB, half the power. Now, do you think that's barely perceptible? To me, it's
very,
not.
Very
it's
acceptable.
Very obvious.
Yeah,
this is a 6 dB change. I don't have a 1 dB one on here. I thought I did, but I don't. So
bear
here's.
Bear in mind that this isn't 20 to 20K system.
True, but it's more. I think it's more valid to do the test. With just the mid-band stuff, and that's essentially what we're hearing owing to the natural bandwidth of the sound system. Those are really wonderful little speakers, but they're little speakers. They're not going to have a lot of energy below 150 hertz or so, I guess. Yeah, they're a great speaker. Those are, what's the model number, Meyer?
It's Meyer MM4.
ME4?
MM.
MM4. They're not Bose, they're Myers. Say, here's a 6 dB difference. Fourth as loud, yeah, maybe. To me, it's maybe a third as loud, or a little less than that. Here's a 10 dB difference, so think whether this is twice or half as loud. To me, that's less than half as loud, but I bet some of you have the opposite reaction. And that's the point, is it varies a little bit from person to person. That's kind of a subjective measure, if I can be afforded a malapropism. This is 20 dB change.
So would you say that's 20 dB down from the original?
Yes. And they're exactly the same wave file. They were just recorded and then reduced in level as and saved as another wave file. They're all the same.
So would you start with 10 dB down and then go to 20 dB down?
Sure. Did that seem like more, the same or different than going between the full and the 10?
If I was just going to subjectively say, I would say that that one's like 2.5 to 3.
Yeah. I think my judgment is tainted by the fact that I know what the change in power level is, and I think that exaggerates what I think I'm hearing, but the speculation. I've tried it with people who don't know that or that can't see the change, the amount of the change, and there still seems to be significant variation in where people assign the numbers. And again, this isn't a validation of Fletcher-Munson because this is noise, but I think it's in a room with a loudspeaker, it's a better demonstration for everyone than using tones. I've thought about trying to do one with warble tones. I'm going to try that someday, but I've never done it.
I feel pretty adept at doing visual half, double, quarter, whatever, but I'm having a hard time doing an audible one. How would you do an experiment to determine this? To me, feels like half or double or...
You mean how did they do it when they did the experiment?
They gave everybody a knob.
At least I believe this is what they did. They gave everybody a knob, and they started there, and they would turn it up or down until it was half or twice as loud. And then they would did that for each of, I don't know if it was done in third octave increments or what. I don't think I've ever read that. Was it third octave?
Sounds right.
Yeah. That was about that same time period when they decided that the third of an octave was the any further resolution wouldn't be needed for this kind of a test. Yes, sir.
Because I'm not an audio person, I don't understand. But why are you guys saying double, half, instead of saying like 5 times or 10 times or 100 times? What's the choice of the factors?
In my case, it's because that's what Fletcher did. That's what most of the curves do. 10 dB is what's considered half or twice. But if we had time, that's a good question. I would like to see somebody do more data points and have a bigger sample. But it's a fairly laborious experiment to run.
Do you think maybe it's just because as humans, it's kind of like half and two are kind of like an easy kind of human multiplier. We always think like twice as much or half as much. And I think it's a little bit arbitrary, would be my guess. Somebody just kind of said, hey, that's probably a reasonable place to kind of start. I think it's a great question. Why two, why not five? Why not?
Or in your daily life, you say, this sounds okay, but I want it to be twice that.
Yeah.
And what does it take to get to be twice that? How much power do you need to put to it to get to twice?
With
right. You want a multiplier.
With real-world signals, meaning music or speech, the whole thing kind of blows up because it very much depended upon the spectrum and the starting level of the signal. And what would sound twice as loud on music would be, I suspect, quite different than what would be twice as loud on speech. I've never seen any rigorous scientific study on that, but I've always kind of wished someone would do one because it sounds interesting to me.
Yeah, my music would be a lot lower than my dad's, but he always thought it was twice as loud as his, but his was actually twice as loud as mine.
Yeah, I would suppose so. Let's try something else. Let's talk about waiting. Somebody earlier asked about awaiting. Awaiting is intended to approximate the frequency response of human hearing at 40 phones. In other words, it's for levels at fairly low levels, below 55 dB or so.
Can you define phones?
Pardon?
Can you define phones?
Yes. Well, I'm not sure I can rigorously, but I can show it to you. It's going the wrong way. If you look right there, that says the loudness level in phones. And if Jay were here, he would start hopping back and forth from one foot to the other if he heard me say what I'm going to say, because it's a gross oversimplification. But phones are essentially the equal loudness contour at 1 kilohertz. If you look at the 120 phone curve, that's this one here, and mid-band, or at about a kilohertz, that's 120 dBSPL. So this level, anywhere along that curve, would be considered 120 phones.
So it's loudness level with the human perceptual system figured into it. In other words, our sensitivity figured into the
yes.
loudness level.
Yeah. At 120 at 120 phones, that level, the level of 120 phones is at 3 kilohertz. It's about 104 dB, something in there.
So when we're
so it's taking into account the varying sensitivity of the human auditory system at that level.
So when we're talking about listening levels for mixing and the like, 85 dB is a good place because it's going. Would it actually be 85 phones that we should be listening at?
I'm not. Repeat your question.
Like
I'm not sure
level
I get it.
For mixing, it's been said, say 79 to 85 dB.
Oh,
is what we're saying to have. But,
okay. Well, I'm going to pounce on you first of all, because it depends on what weighting you're using. Otherwise, that statement is meaningless. Are you talking about 85 dB at 1,000 hertz?
Actually, this
but
is
at,
the
but at what frequency?
Is
it with music or broadband? If it's broadband, and any practical measuring system is probably either flat-weighted, A-weighted, or maybe B and C-weighted. Some meters have B and C curves. Most only have A and flat.
But it's typically, like say, let's see, like 85 or 83 SPL with broadband, with peak noise, A-weighted, is a very typical reference.
Okay, let me go back to where I was.
Thank you.
And you're going to not like
Before
my answer.
Before you leave this, could I make one alternate statement and have the laser pointer for a second?
Just to clarify, the mapping of these numbers across the frequency, these fawn lines are how you perceive the sounds. And so if we take the 40 fawn line and you go to 1 kilohertz, at 40 fawns, it takes a 40 dB sound pressure level to give you a 40 fawn experience. If you want to maintain a 40 fawn experience at 100 hertz, you need 52 dB sound pressure level to get you the same 40 fawn experience. That's how you map these curves from the what you can measure with sound levels to how you perceive things.
Yeah, exactly. Now, back to your question. You see the second line right there? It's not legitimate to use a weighting in the context of your question at 85. A weighting is for use below 55. In other words, at that frequency, I don't think I have a weighted curve. If they had fancy DSP like we have now, we could have built a sound level meter with the Fletcher-Munson curves in them and actually had it measure in phones. That would be really useful. But we don't have that. So in the old days, they built a very simple curve, which was essentially an inversion of the one at 40 phones to compensate for the lower sensitivity of the base, and so they take that curve out. And then the B-weighting one is less low-frequency roll-off, and the C-weighting one everybody says is flat. It's not. It has a little bit of roll-off. And then most meters also have a flat weighting, which means there is no weighting. It has flat response.
And it's fast and slow response.
But if you're listening to a recording, let's say you're talking about the sound level in your studio coming out of your monitors, you will have and you are listening at what the sound level meter tells you is 85 dBA, you will have a very different perceived loudness if you're listening to a speech recording as opposed to something with a really pronounced bass line. Very different. So, first of all, at 85, I would be inclined to use B weighting or even a flat weighting, but it depends on your purpose, whether you're trying to listen at that level to protect your hearing or whether you're trying to keep it at that level just because you want to have it at a reference level.
The intention is to have the most balanced perception across.
Okay, so what you're trying to achieve is what level will give you the most, what's the word I want?
The
most useful frequency response of your human hearing to get spectral balance.
Exactly.
Without damage.
Well, there's that.
I think if we asked 15 people in this room to answer that question, we'd get about 20 or 25 different answers. Mm-hmm. And I'd probably give you three or four different ones myself. My thinking, and I don't do the kind of work that you do, so I'm not really qualified to answer your question. You should answer it yourself. But my line of thinking is it depends on the kind of stuff you're recording. It's going to be different for classical music versus rock and roll. Beyond that, I'm not quite sure. What do other people think? Anybody else have a thought on that question? It's a really good question. I'm not sure there would be a consensus even if we polled the room.
I think one of the considerations is you mix it at the level you think people are going to play it back as, because you're going to be in the same spot with the Fletcher-Munson when you're mixing it as they're going to be listening to it too. So whether it's in A or B or C doesn't really matter. If long as they're listening to it at the same level and they have the same curves, one way to look at it.
Now, I'm a mastering engineer, so one of the things that I do is I actually master at a reasonably loud level so that when people turn it up, they aren't surprised horribly. Because if I mastered at a low level, then those curves change a lot.
You would end up with too much bass probably.
Exactly. So that's why I have it reasonable. I think mix softly and master with a big stick.
Yeah.
Is right.
I can tell you that there are some weird de facto standards, and I'm not sure where they originated, but in movie sound, there are Academy standards for levels. They've tended to violate them in recent years, but dialogue is supposed to be at 75 to 80. And they do use a weighting for that, which is probably legitimate because it excludes low-frequency rumble that existed in those old sound systems from the optical soundtrack, which would not be audible to the human, but it is audible to the meter if you don't filter it out. And the peak, wrong word, the maximum levels, not the peak levels, but the maximum levels is supposed to be 95, and therefore the peak levels will be 105, except in the era of LFE, the low frequency effects channel is 10 dB higher than that, so that's 115. Most people, those are the standards that the theater is supposed to be able to achieve and that they're supposed to be adjusted to on a standard levels on the soundtrack. In home theater, if you play it that loud, most people don't like it. Some of us do, but if you're watching a long movie, it exceeds OSHA limits. So it's probably not a good idea. But most people don't like it that loud, so they turn it down.
So the additional 10 dB in the LFE, is that where the 0.1, that's what I've heard, is that 5.1?
Yeah, the 0.1, it represents the LFE channel. And on that one, the gain through the system is offset 10 dB, because otherwise, to make it that loud, they'd have to throw away too much headroom in the rest of the signal. So the gain, the physical gain from the files that are on the disc, the LFE channel is amplified an additional 10 dB, whether in the theater or your living room. And you don't need as much signal-to-noise ratio there because at those frequencies, remember what the threshold of hearing is, you can possibly hear the, even with a 20 dB offset, you'd still be well below threshold of audibility with any
air pressure
noise.
In the room.
Pardon?
At those frequencies, more air pressure in the barometric experience than... beaming thing for low frequency.
So B weighting is less low frequency roll off and is supposed to be more or less at 70 phones, and then C weighting is at I think it's at 100. Does anybody remember? C weighting is not quite flat. There's a little bit of roll-off, but not much. And then many meters just have a flat, which is unweighted. Now, here's some of the... Bob Smith, who's sitting here on the front row, sent me these a couple of days ago, and they were really exciting for me because I saw exactly this same problem about 30 years ago, the first time I ever played with an FFT analyzer. And we had been struggling with a gymnasium, a high school gymnasium, whose noise level measured fine, even in third octaves, but look, A weighted is right where it was supposed to be. But the noise, it sounded much, much louder than it should at that level. And it was a really raspy sound. And it was right about the time when they started fiddling with... sodium HID lamping. And we finally figured out what the problem was. We didn't have a solution when we got this FFT and we could look at it in narrower bands. So first I'm going to play these two samples for you. Both of these samples have essentially identical levels in dBA, which is a broadband measurement, A weighted, and they're in the 60 region, so that's the correct weighting to use for that. I'm going to play them back a little louder than that or you won't hear it. But they both have the same level in dBA, and they have very similar spectral shapes, and I'll show you that in a minute. But listen to the difference in your reaction to the sound. So we'll start with, Bob, do you want to describe the two venues and this circumstance?
Both places are in Anacortes. One is the big house at Dakota Creek Shipyard. This is a space that's about the size of a football field, and they build the pilot houses
that go on 500- and 600-foot ships in this space. The second one is a restaurant in there. In the had lunch at a restaurant that just happened to have about the same sound pressure level and DBA, but a very different auditory experience.
So let's play the first one. This is the factory floor, and this is this was just ambient. This was with the workers not running the machine.
This is lunchtime.
Yeah. Okay. You like that? That's what that gym sounded like. The high school was not happy. This is the restaurant, still about the same level. I'm going to turn them down to try to... These were at 60?
The environments were at 60 dBA.
Yeah, let me see if I can come down and we'll replay them and try to match the levels. Bearing in mind that having my sound level meter mic over here compared to where you're sitting is completely invalid, but... where did my mouse get... Those are a couple of dB above the 60.
In the second case, you've got a varying amplitude.
Yeah, it's varying.
It averages.
Yeah.
If you look at the whole time of the clip, it averages that, but you'll have some peaks above
yes.
and some valleys below.
Now, let's look at the spectrum. And that's exactly what I saw the first time I heard that sort of thing. The red one is the factory, or the factory that had the HID sodium. Were they low pressure or high pressure?
High pressure.
High pressure sodium lights. Those are the ones that look pale orangey. The low pressure look really orangey or greenish sometimes. And the blue one is the restaurant. Notice that the spectral shape, the overall spectral shape is pretty much the same. And we've already said that the A-weighted level is the same, but look at up here. What a mess. And my hypothesis is that what we're perceiving, what's driving our brain crazy, is the envelope, the upper trace of the envelope of that mess. And what this is, I'm convinced this is what you were recording, and I know it's what I recorded when we saw this long ago. These are our magnetic ballasts. They're essentially like a transformer, they have a single winding. And so they're comprised of a stack of metal plates with windings or electrical wire-wound windings in them. So when they're passing current, they're generating a magnetic field that's building and collapsing with each half of the power cycle, the 60-cycle waveform of the power system. And so they're bang, 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 bang at 120 hertz, not 60, but 120, because they bang at each half cycle. If you look at the... I can't really see the frequency marks, but if you look down here, this was recorded A-weighted with weighting in?
No, it just had a 100 hertz high-pass filter.
Oh, okay.
120.
But even if this was flat, you still would not be able to hear that 120 hertz at this level, no, not even close. Remember the Fletcher-Munson curse, jump up way down there. But what you are seeing is the especially the odd harmonics, which are all these spikes that are sticking up. And that's what you're hearing, is that impact of all those plates clanging together. And there's several solutions if you run into this. One is, don't use HID lamps. This is sometimes hard to convince because there's a big energy savings to be had. Or you can go to electronic ballasting, which operates at a much higher frequency and uses electronic oscillators as opposed to the electromechanical inductor of the ballast. Or you can remote the ballast. That's the electrical engineer I used to work for. That's what he did. He would never put these inside a gym or a room that was supposed to be quiet. He'd put the ballast in another room or in the attic or something. Costs more to do it that way. There's more stuff to wire up. You have to have bigger wires between the ballast and the lamps.
What happens if you laminate them together, glue them all so they don't vibrate?
The forces are so strong that actually doesn't work. They are glued together with a kind of varnish, but they still manage to vibrate anyway. There are some ballasts that are much quieter than others, but the experience I had at that time was that, and this was part of our study actually, was that the ballast manufacturers not only cheated on their measurements, but they didn't even know what they were doing. So they cheated even worse than they would have had they known. And the numbers, some ballasts that were rated at 55 dBA, whatever that means, they gave no indication of what the conditions were or the spectrum or anything, were actually noisier than ones rated at 75. And I'm not exaggerating. That's what we found. We obtained many samples of these and measured them.
Do you know what creates those, the higher order harmonics? Like, what? There's stuff up there at 10K or 8K.
Right here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, do you know the mechanism?
These things go out to the middle of channel 2 or something like that.
It's the resonance of the individual plates, but they're all spaced 120 hertz apart. So if you measure from peak to
they're
peak.
They're all multiples of 120.
Yeah.
You got these things clanging.
But if you take a sheet of M6 and you drop it on the floor, you're going to get resonances way high up.
It's like square waves, right? Yeah. So you get the odd harmonics.
Yeah.
Farther the square.
Another way to think of that is that these kind of motions are essentially creating squarish type waves. It's an impact sound. And square waves, if you remember your FFT conversions, a square wave has harmonics from here to infinity in theory, depending on how square it is. And that's why you're getting all these harmonics up here, very strong. And that's what you're hearing, that raspy sound.
And if you're designing guitar amps, sometimes this is a very useful thing to take advantage of if you want something louder and still using very low power.
It's a difficult problem. It used to be worse, but it's still difficult because architects and electrical engineers tend to believe what the manufacturers. These are not fly-by-nighters. This is people like GE and Philips. And they tend to believe the data that they're getting from those manufacturers. But I'm here to tell you it's worthless and worse. And the only real way to solve this problem is either don't use HIDs or remote them, or use an electronic one that really is quiet. Some of the electronic ones are noisy, too. They actually radiate. They not only are noisy acoustically, can be, but electrically they're even worse than the mechanical ones. And if you have a microphone within three blocks of them, you can listen to it on the sound system. You don't even need to open the gain. Anyway, that was very interesting, and I'm going to use this in other talks with proper attribution. It's a very informative comparison. and particularly since the spectral shape is so similar between the two spaces. But it doesn't take most people very long to decide which room they'd rather sit in for an hour.
The spectral shape looks different from here. The red is pretty flat across with some big peaks, whereas the...
Yeah, but if you look at the average level, it's pretty close. I know it's hard to visually average that, but it's the peaks that are sticking up that I think you're hearing. But the measured level is about the same, and if you visually average that stuff, it isn't that much different here. This has the blue has a little bit more low frequency, and the red has a little bit more high frequency, but it's the peaks that you're reacting to. At least that's my theory. So in summary, and if you don't remember anything else, you write this down and tape it to your glasses, or if you don't wear glasses, you can staple it to your forehead. dB is always a power ratio. No matter what kind of a ratio you compute it from, ultimately you're dealing with a power ratio. That's the only valid thing. And it's 10 log P1 over P2. You can use 20 log if the impedances are equal. And by setting P2, the denominator in that ratio, to some kind of an absolute reference level, then the dB becomes a unit of measure, such as dBSBL, dBm, dBu, or dB Cooper. So for further study, I like the stuff in the IEEE dictionary, the sound system book by Davis and everybody else is really excellent. There's a book, I don't know if it's still in print or not, the Handbook of for Sound Engineers, the new cyclopedia. What was the guy's name? You know who I'm talking about. Glenn Blue.
Yeah, I think it's still in print in like edition 4 or 5.
I think so.
Everybody...
And it has some odd things in it, but it's really useful, and it's so comprehensive, it's fun to flip through when you're in the bathroom and things. And the first chapter of Baranek's book has a lot of really good basic information that hasn't changed since he wrote that. And then another one, especially where you're dealing with acoustical noise, is Carl Kreider's book, The Effects of Noise on Man. It's not a very new book, but I think it's my favorite on that topic. So thanks very much for asking me to talk and for coming, and especially thank you to Dan and I'm having a brain fart here, for setting up everything up with me today, and I wouldn't have got through this without them. And everybody should come and look at this really cool app running on this iPad. Dan can mix them there, I can mix them here all wirelessly. This is magic stuff.
I'm happy to talk about it afterwards if anybody wants to talk.
Yeah, I mean, this was science fiction 20 years ago. And here we are. I can change the levels on my stuff. And it's all wireless and looks like a little mixer. And just move with my finger.
There's a question.
Any other questions? Yes.
I never really got in my question about the dB weighting. Is there an inherent bias if you're using, say, a flat or a DBC rating to allow more low-frequency noise and call it good? I don't quite understand how the Fletcher-Munsinger curve works with the allowance of components of a lot of noise, especially buses and cars. It's very low frequency. The sound meter says it's 80 decibels, but really maybe it's 140.
The purpose of the weighting is to make the measurement correspond to the perceived loudness that a human will observe when you're listening to that. And it first started way back when looking at signal-to-noise ratios. And the problem they had then, with especially with older tube-type amplifiers, the tube amplifiers put out a huge amount of hum relative to hiss. But the hiss is what you hear. So if you just make a broadband flat measurement, you're actually measuring the hum and not the hiss. Well, the hum is below the threshold of audibility. There's no point. Your measurement's totally invalid if you're trying to decide which amplifier is going to sound noisier to a human. You have to filter out the low frequencies in order to compensate for the much difference in threshold of sensitivity, or the sensitivity of the ear at those very low level sounds, which is the ambient noise level. So that's where it started, and they just come up with those three or four curves. There's also one called the D weighting. I can't remember what that looks like, but there's actually four of them that are in the standard. So that's the idea. And the reason that A weighting is useful for that is that makes the measurement of the noise level of the device correspond more to the sensitivity of the human. So a thing that has, you may be comparing two amplifiers, one has a 60 dB signal to noise ratio, the other one is 75 dB signal to noise ratio, but the 60 one is a tubed amplifier, and the 75 one is a solid-state amplifier. I'm here to tell you that when you listen to it, the 60 dB tube amplifier will be a lot quieter than the 75 dB solid-state amplifier, because solid-state amplifiers, most of their noise is hiss, which is very audible. It's right in the middle of the mid-band where your ear is the most sensitive. So that was the purpose. And the reason for different weightings is to have a different curve that most closely approximates the equal loudness contour at that level. So if you're trying to gauge how loud your car stereo can go, you probably want to use a flat weighting or a C weighting, because you're going to play it loud, and up there the bass is part of the intended signal.
Psychophysically, in terms of taking a measurement of exposure levels, if you're having a very high level of low frequency noise, is that going to do as much damage to your ears as the acceptable weighted levels of, say, 85 dB for 6 hours?
You've opened a big can of worms. And most of the regulations for noise exposure use A weighting, incorrectly so, in my opinion, but unfortunately they didn't ask me. This originated for the most part with OSHA, and the federal government is not known, in my experience, for doing things correctly when it comes to these sorts of things.
Imagine that.
Yes, the low frequencies can clobber your hearing just as much as the high frequencies, and the regulations, because most of them use A weightings, give that short shrift. However, there is some evidence that low frequencies, you're a little more tolerant of noise damage from low frequencies than high, but the difference is really slight. It's certainly nothing like what the A weighting curve puts into it.
There's a really good study the Army did in the 70s where they put some guys out next to some helicopters near the rotor blades and did hearing studies on the before and after. And there's a great study on low frequency hearing loss.
Yeah. The most dangerous things for hearing, permanent hearing loss, actually are impact sounds and impulsive sounds. One firearm shot can cause permanent and significant damage, just one. So if you're a shooter, don't go near a firearm without hearing defenders, good ones. And many of the regulations totally ignore that. I see guys running jackhammers all the time, don't even have earplugs, let alone muffs. And those guys, when they're my age, are going to be stone deaf, if they're not already. And a lot of musicians are doing that, too. I remember a number of years ago, I was mixing monitor for Glenn Campbell, of all people. And his drummer kept complaining that he couldn't hear his kick drum. And we ended up putting two side fill monitors. They were something from EV. I don't remember what they were, but they had 15-inch woofers. One here, one here, literally. And hooked up to a crown that was 500 watts a side, and every time he'd hit the kick drum, the clip light would go bleak, 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 bleak. And he claimed it was better, but still not loud enough. And I couldn't help noticing that he was wearing hearing aids. And I said, you do know this is why you're deaf. This guy was younger than me. He was, I don't know, mid-20s. And I didn't like that. I wasn't too many feet away from him, and I had on David Clark's and plugs, and I was still uncomfortable.
When you were talking about the two noises on the spectra, you mentioned about averages. What's the significance of average? Talking about average when the individual spectrum are different and the auditory experience is different.
What's significant about the average?
Let me
go back to that slide. Oops. Push the wrong button. And I don't seem to be smart enough to run this keyboard. Okay, you're talking about when we were talking about this part here in the average. When you're making a broadband measurement, remember I mentioned the A-weighted level for these two samples are the same. What you're measuring is the average. I assume you weren't using a peak mode or anything. Mm-hmm. It was just a dBA slow.
Mm-hmm. dBA slow.
So you're measuring the average. So the average is, if you can kind of visually compute the average, is down here someplace. Whereas what our ear is responding to are these spikes up here. So they're much higher than the average for this sample. Whereas in this sample, the difference between the peaks and the average is much less. That's why this sounds so much louder than it measures. Is that your question?
I didn't get the idea of weighting.
A weighting or any slow temporal response on the sound level meter is going to be an average. Some meters have a peak function, so they can display the levels of these peaks up here. And that's sometimes useful, but not what was recorded here. And most sound level meters don't have that feature. It's much more difficult to implement that. So when you have a $2,000 meter like this one, you can do that. When you have a $100 one from Radio Shack, which for the money are pretty good little meters, they don't have that feature.
Mark, is the point in talking about the average, is the point that as you said, the meters internally are averaging, and I guess my takeaway from this is that that's not always a good indication of how you'll experience.
That's correct, and that's Bob's point and mine, is that a slow A-weighted average broadband gives you a number that's valid, but it may not correspond for peculiar signals like this especially, it may not correspond well at all with what you perceive as the level of loudness or especially the level of annoyance. And therefore, using that $40 Radio Shack meter will tend to give you, it's not really wrong data, but it's misleading. So from that point of view, it's false. And you need something that does narrowband FFT and maybe other kinds of analysis to see it. You might need a 3D waterfall from a TEF or something to really see what's going on.
So what you're saying is if I used a meter, I might be compelled to put these, what are they called, these lights?
HIDs.
I might be compelled to put HIDs in my house.
You might, yeah. And if you do, my recommendation is remote the ballast, put them in the garage. And even then, you might need to resiliently suspend them inside an enclosure that will have to be have cooling fans, and then you have to deal with the noise out of that.
I think the overall thing with this kind of install is that the meter gives you a number that makes you think the customer's complaining, but it's not really a problem because the meter says it's fine.
Exactly,
it's the customer's problem, right. Not
or you'll based upon. Based upon a spec sheet that gives you a measured number, and it might even be a valid one. They didn't cheat. They measured it correctly. But you'll pick this product because it's 10 dB quieter than that one, and it actually isn't. Not to a human.
Right.
It is to the meter, but not to the human.
And this is a classic example. If I throw a handful of tacks on the floor, it doesn't change the overall level of the floor that much.
Yeah.
But it's far less comfortable.
Yeah. Acoustics is horribly complicated. That's what makes it so much fun.
It's 10:10, so it's probably your time.
Okay. Thank you again.
Thank you.